and well and met with citizens and voters to tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can.
Yes, 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 it's time. We all come together. Ha ha! Barack Obama!
Yes, we can be.
Barack Obama!
We are together.
Barack Obama! Yeah, yeah, yeah! Barack Obama! Oh! Barack Obama's making history, man. He's coming with a message for the people saying, yes, we can. Sure! Si se puede, today is a new day. So come on and throw your hands up, every woman, every man. Barack Obama!
Yes, we can be.
Barack Obama.
We are ever
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Barack Obama.
Swung. Building blocks of the new crowd. A million stops in a new route. The acting out of the possible. It feels better than the futile. Political change, political play. All in attempt to rebel is the bane of a power to the people. So that we may develop the sequel. For living in love of the beast. For pushing the envelope, honoring all of the work. Paying attention to reason. Dipping our feet and deeper than moderate work. Teaching minds of a new height. Seeking thoughts of a new life. This is the meaning of outreach. When it's out of reach, we still
work.
Yes, we can be.
Barack Obama.
We are ever
now.
Everybody, welcome to Galactic Roundtable with Beth Trutwin. We will spend the next little while working together on our ascension, and we'll work on personal, planetary, galactic, universal, omniversal, and cosmic ascension. The cosmos beyond describes all the non-physical antimatter universes. As we creator gods came to this part of the Nebadon universe aeons ago, we birthed through Mother Sekhmet's Yani at Galactic Center. The end of time has been prophesied in many ethnic cultures for thousands of years. Last summer, August 17th, 2010, the Milky Way galaxy aligned with the Sun. This marked the constellation movement of the Mayan calendar. It came sooner than the predicted December 21st, 2012. Time has speeded up due to the collective consciousness of totality and divine grace of all that is, raising their vibrations in a constant process of ascension to a level where we have surpassed the conjunct of the Milky Way with the Sun. We are in the end times. It marks the end of the grand experiment of good and evil, of duality. It marks the end of the fallen angels on Earth planet. With their removal, we will become the 33rd member of the Intergalactic Confederation of Worlds. We all incarnated into physical bodies on Earth to change from a planet of duality to a planet of peace. We are working with the Syrian commander, Barack Obama, who is the 9th member on the Syrian Council of Nine on Sirius A. His head of Secret Service is a physical template of Lord Sananda, who we call King of Swords. I work for KOS with millions of other walk-in souls living in human bodies. We are all telepathically connected and working together in every walk of life. Police, Interpol, government agencies, military, lawyers, judges, journalists, and too many others to list here. Each of us play an important role where the outcome will be the capture and arrest of intergalactic war criminals, the fallen angels who were trying to have Earth and her resources as their own, as well as tens of other planets. We on the ground crew work closely with the Galactic Federation, headed by the Admiral, Lord Sananda, a higher aspect of the Prophet Jesus, also known as Yeshua, and the Captain, Lord Ashtar. They have full say in many of the aspects of this mission for Earth Ascension. They work directly with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, as well as millions of white knights around the world. You play a big part in this as you wake up to the truth and share the news with others. We must work together to dissolve the programming from inside the Matrix. I will be pre-recording this program every week. I will be doing it recorded, not live, because it is better for my life situation. It is also less expensive to do a program without the use of an engineer answering the calls and monitoring. I want to thank BBS Radio, the greatest internet radio in the galaxy, for inviting me to be here each week. I invite you to become a member of the Galactic Roundtable at www.galacticroundtable.com. You may launch to this radio program from there. There we go in depth each day as a group together and keep the discussion alive. There you will find the news in the blog, our discussions on the forum, videos, articles, channeling, and much else, new info each day. This is our family and where we join to check in with each other and the current changes in Earth Ascension. I keep this site up to date every day as part of my spiritual service. I have 2 volunteers working to help me moderate the videos, pictures, and memberships each day. I have another volunteer who helps me with my graphics. They lovingly devote their service every day, and I could not function without that help. I'm grateful for all who play a part of the family at Galactic Roundtable. I manage to keep everything going with your donations, and you may find a donation button on the site. I use the money for electric, Wi-Fi, server fees, and the radio broadcast. Every little bit helps. And don't worry, we're all helping each other in this collective endeavor. I'm also building my other website, www.cosmicascension.com. There I will add many features for self-discovery and healing. There is where we go to discover who you are, where you have come from, and what is your mission. I have added a lot of new stuff this week, everybody, and I'll be adding more tonight and tomorrow. So please continue to visit cosmicascension.com. as we carry out our lives of service to our fellow woman, child, and man on earth. Inside the matrix, we continue to have tests and challenges, and from that concept that I affectionately call 3D. The first dimension is a point in space. The second dimension is a plane, a flat, barren surface. The third dimension is latitude. Imagine a cube with six planes connected together, the top, bottom, and four sides floating up and down. Within the cube is a third dimensional space. The fourth dimension is time, pure and simple, a point in space in relation to time on a timeline in a dimension. The fifth dimension is the etheric realm with no time. We exist there simultaneously now. We travel in our etheric bodies to the etheric realms at night when we sleep. Our etheric bodies are known by many names, such as Avatar body, like Jake Sully and Neytiri in the Lion Woman in the movie Avatar. They are also known as our cosmic consciousness. We are all multidimensional beings living on a multidimensional earth as one people, one land, one love. So welcome tonight. We have a lot to cover. First, I'd like to discuss what is new in Earth current events. There was a huge, huge story today, and I noted this from Lord Rama, and all the times I would bring another arrest to Galactic Roundtable, Tara would always say, that's good, that's really good, but nothing's going to happen until we see the Pope arrested. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that that happened now, and I want to share with you two attorneys from Bavaria. Last week, submitted a complaint of criminal charges against Dr. Joseph Ratzinger, Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, on grounds of crimes against humanity, according to Article 7, ICC statute. This was submitted to The Hague, everybody, and I want to read to you the grounds of the arrest. The charges are directed against three worldwide crimes, which until now have not been denounced merely because they stemmed from an institution headed by the highest dignitaries who appear to be far above criminal acts. The traditional reverence toward ecclesiastical authority has clouded the sense of right and wrong. If by way of massive psychological pressure, a new religious group were to force its members to integrate their newborn into the group in order to finance the latter its whole life long and to orient itself in everything according to the directives of the group, it would be called a sect. It is possible the state would dissolve the group and punish the sect leaders on grounds of coercion and extortion. Even more so, if the group would not tolerate anyone leaving, instead hindering this under threat of severest punishment, thus giving rise to serious emotional disturbances and impairment of the freedom of development in many of its members. Under the same facts and circumstances, can this be any different merely because it concerns an organization that acts in the same way not only toward a few, but worldwide, calling itself the Roman Catholic Church, and constantly referring to religious freedom while setting sect commissioners onto those of different faith? It is not different, but people have simply become accustomed to it. However, since July 1st, 2002, the inurement is no longer admissible. On this day, the statute for the International Criminal Court came into effect, making crimes against humanity a punishable offense. If a coercive sect of the kind described above were widespread in present-day Africa and its members were forbidden the use of condoms under threat of severe punishment, Transmission of the HIV/AIDS virus and the deaths caused by this would be attributed to the sect leaders, and charges would be brought against them. Can this be any different simply because the coercive sect calls itself a church and its head claims to be infallible? If in a worldwide coercive sect, hundreds of thousands of children were sexually abused and the crimes covered up and prosecution called off at the behest of the sect leader, this criminal organization and its leader would be put on trial. Can this be any different merely because the organization calls itself a church? And the command to be silent about the crimes does not come from a mafia boss, but it is pronounced by the Pope. It is no different, but it is simply centuries of becoming inured to a pedophile priesthood and the power of its high priests. Since the statutory offense of crimes against humanity exists, this looking the other way is no longer admissible. In the following, charges are brought against three crimes committed against humanity, for which Dr. Joseph Ratzinger, as former cardinal and present-day pope, is criminally liable. Number one, the preservation and leadership of a worldwide totalitarian regime of coercion, which subjugates its members with terrifying and health-endangering threats. Number two, the adherence to a fatal forbiddance of the use of condoms, even when the danger of HIV/AIDS infection exists. And number three, the establishment and maintenance of a worldwide system of cover-up of the sexual crimes committed by Catholic priests and their preferential treatment, which aids and abets ever new crimes. Number one, the terrifying church regime. There is strong suspicion that Dr. Joseph Ratzinger, as cardinal and as pope, caused severe impairment to the mental and physical health of an unknown number of people in the meaning of Article 7, 1K ICC statute, in any case provoking corresponding health hazards. Number one, compulsory membership. The Roman Catholic Church acquires its members through a compulsory act, namely, through the baptism of infants that do not yet have a will of their own, as determined by Canon 96 of the Code of Canon Law, CIC. By baptism, one is incorporated into the Church of Christ. As a rule, baptism takes place during infancy. Catholic parents must believe that their newborn is burdened with the taint of original sin, from which it can be freed solely through baptism. In the current catechism of the Roman Catholic Church, it literally says the following about this. Born with a fallen human nature and tainted by original sin, children also have need of the new birth to baptism to be freed from the power of darkness and brought into the realm of freedom of the children of God, to which all men are called. The church and parents would deny a child the priceless grace of becoming a child of God were they not to confer baptism shortly after birth. Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 1250. And in the Code of Canon Law, it says in Canon 867, paragraph 1, parents are obliged to take care that infants are baptized in the first few weeks, as soon as possible after the birth, or even before it. They are to go to the pastor to request the sacrament for their child and be prepared properly for it. In case the child is in danger of dying, the baptism should even take place against the will of the parents. Canon 868, paragraph 2, CIC, determines the following regarding this. An infant of Catholic parents or even of non-Catholic parents is baptized literally in danger of death even against the will of the parents. Most Catholic parents defer to this statement and have their children baptized as early as possible, usually a few weeks after birth. According to prevailing opinion, their right to care for and raise their children is sufficient for this, even though, according to Catholic doctrine, baptism binds the baptized child in a way that amounts to living in servitude. I repeat, living in servitude. The Catholic Catechism states the following about this. Having become a member of the Church, the person baptized belongs no longer to himself, but to him who died and rose for us. From now on, he is called to be subject to others, to serve them in the communion of the Church, and to obey and submit to the Church leaders, holding them in respect and affection. Catechism number 1269. The incorporation of the baptized child in the Catholic Church is irrevocable. There's some German, sorry, skipping over that. It's from a quote, second edition, Berlin, 1994, page 759, due to which the Church also refuses to delete people who have left the Church from the baptismal records. According to the binding doctrine of the Church, leaving the Church leads to the eternal punishment of hell. This is what it says, for instance, in the book by Joseph Neuner and J. Dupuis, The Christian Faith in the Doctrinal Documents of Catholic Church, 2001, margin note number 1005, page 421. The Holy Roman Church firmly believes, professes, and preaches that no one remaining outside the Catholic Church, not only pagans, but also Jews, heretics, or schismatics, can become partakers of eternal life, but they will go to the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels, unless before the end of their life they are joined to it, the Church. According to Canon 1364, in conjunction with Canon 751 of the Corpus Iureus Canonicae, CIC, to leave the Church leads to excommunication, which in turn, according to number 1463 of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, represents a particularly grave sin that, according to number 861 of the Catechism, results in the eternal death of hell. Number 2. Psycho-terror. Among other things, the following applies to members of the Church. Neuner J. and Roos H., the teaching of the Catholic Church as contained in her documents. Mercier Press, Limited, 1967, margin note number 91, page 63. If anyone shall not receive as sacred and canonical the books of Holy Scripture, entire with all their parts as the Holy Synod of Trent as enumerated them, or shall deny that they have been divinely inspired, anathema sit, literally translated from the Greek-Latin formation, means may he be damned. According to this, anyone who does not acknowledge the threats of punishment in the Old Testament as the Word of God is also damned. For example, if a man commits adultery with his wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 20:10. If a man lies with a male, as with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, they shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 20:13. The man who acts presumptuously by not obeying the priest, who stands to minister before the Lord your God or the judge, that man shall die. Deuteronomy 17:12. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of his city, "This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. Deuteronomy 21:18-21. At first glance, such things may seem like something from the Stone Age that has been obsolete for thousands of years. The Roman Catholic Church, however, views it differently. In 1965, its highest body, in the form of the Second Vatican Council, declared the following in its dogmatic constitution on divine revelation. For Holy Mother Church, relying on the belief of the apostles, holds that the books of both the Old and New Testament, in their entirety, with all their parts, are sacred and canonical because written under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. They have God as their author and have been handed on as such to the church herself. Therefore, since everything asserted by the inspired authors or sacred writers must be held to be asserted by the Holy Spirit, it follows that the books of Scripture must be acknowledged as teaching solidly, faithfully, and without error that truth. And then there's a hot link to the Vatican website. Accordingly, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, held to be valid until today, it says, the Old Testament is an indispensable part of sacred Scripture. Its books are divinely inspired. Christians venerate the Old Testament as the true Word of God, Numbers 121 and 123. If this is so, it is possible that only the limits imposed by secular law are keeping the Church from carrying out the threats of the death that the Old Testament holds ready for adulterers, homosexuals, heretics, and disobedient children. Among other things, the God of the Old Testament, the words of which the Church still considers valid today as the true Word of God, calls upon one to take care lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land to which you go, lest it become a snare in your midst. You shall tear down their altars and break their pillars and cut down their asherim, sacred poles. Exodus 4:12-13. Paul, who is venerated by the church as the apostle to the nations, even goes a step further by writing the following about heretics or followers of other cults. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They know God's decree that those who practice such things deserve to die. Romans 1:29-32. How seriously the church takes such calls when secular law does not hold it in check was demonstrated, for instance, by its missionary work in Latin America. And should a nation rebel against the cruel God of the Old Testament with whom the church identifies, it is threatened anew with terrible things. He shall eat up the nations, his adversaries, and shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them through with his arrows. Exodus 24:8. Even if a contemporary and common sense is not at all inclined to connect this with God, according to church opinion, this too is the true word of God. And anyone who claims differently is considered one of the false teachers against whom the church hurls the following words in the second letter of Peter. But these, like irrational animals, creatures of instinct, born to be brought and destroyed, they are blots and blemishes. 2 Peter 2:12-13. There is no freedom or faith or of conscience. Instead, the following holds true. Furthermore, we declare, state, and define that it is absolutely necessary for the salvation of men that they submit to the Roman pontiff. Neuner and Rus, margin note 342. The decisions of the Pope are, quote, irreformable of themselves and not from the consent of the Church. But if any, which God avert, presume to contradict this, our definition, anathema sit, damned, equals damned. Neuner Rus, margin note 388. To be damned means to be damned to the eternal torments of hell. Karl Jaspers, one of the great German philosophers of the past century, writes the following about these sanctions. There are the eternal torments of hell. The Church relentlessly spurned the teachings of Origen, who regarded the punishments of hell as limited in time by the restoration of all things. Apokatastasis panton. Through this, the souls remained in its hand. Nietzsche pointed out that the Church sees the widespread concept of eternal punishment as the most fertile egg of its power, because the priest penetrates into the inmost of the soul on the strength of his office, not as mere mortal. He can put unheard-of pressure on the believer. Parents may be held liable and threatened with purgatory or failing to keep their grown children in the church. Jaspers, Philosophical Faith and Revelation, New York, 1967, page 43. In the official documents of the Roman Catholic Church about the last things, it says, among other things, in accordance with God's universal ordinance, the souls of those who die in actual mortal sin descend immediately after death to hell, where they are tormented by eternal punishment. Nunneren Rus, margin note 822. But whoever dies in mortal sin without penance will without any doubt suffer forever in the fires of eternal hell. Nunneren Rus, margin note 815. Thereby, it is brought again and again to the believer's attention that this involves not only mental emotional torments, but also terrible physical tortures, with which Jesus Christ allegedly will punish the evil ones at the last judgment. Jesus Christ will come at the end of time to judge the living and the dead, to render to each according to his works, to the rejected and to the elect, who will arise with their own bodies which they now have, so that they may receive, according as their works were good or bad, neither perpetual punishment with the devil or eternal glory with Christ. Nunneren Rus, note 813. At the same time, the Church threatens the faithful by way of the alleged statements of Jesus found in the gospel text authorized by the Church. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, he will place the sheep at his right hand, but the goats to his left. Then he will say to those at his left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels, and they will go away into eternal punishment. Matthew 25, 31, 32, 41, 46. The social psychologist Franz Bugel writes about the eternal torments of hell, with which the Church makes threats in its own documents with the help of the alleged words of Jesus, among others, a threat of punishment which disastrous, psychologically devastating effect on countless people in the history of Christendom cannot be at all overstated. Try to free yourself from all inurement caused by religious education and to realize what psychological significance a threat of eternally lasting torments must have. All otherwise known tortures and punishments pale in the face of this, because they are at least limited by time. There is hardly any other psychological phenomenon like the threat of eternal lasting torments, which very much deserves the name psychoterror. For they know not what they believe. 1992, page 98. And many people, not lastly in children and youth, the results of this terror are fear of sinning, chronic bad conscience, hypochondria, and a myriad of manifestations of ecclesiogenetic neuroses, which can imply bondage to the Church, and for which is still effective even in those who, over the course of their life, tried to free themselves from the details of the Church message of threat. Carl Jasper writes concerning this, to the hour of death, the priest may bring comfort or torment. To this day, Catholics who have ceased to believe are seen to turn back then, as if held by an inner chain. Jasper's Otsit, page 43. It is the mental agony that shackles Church members from a very early age, expressed in one of the most important writings of the Papal Church, in which it says, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. Hebrews 10:31. Number 3. A crime against humanity. The coercion of faith and of conscience that goes out from the Roman Catholic Church, practiced against members recruited and held under compulsion, and enforced with threats of the severest evil imaginable in the eternal torments of hell, is a grave impairment of the personal freedom of development and of a person's emotional and mental integrity. That Church members thereby do not collectively collapse mentally and emotionally can only be due to the fact that many do not take a large part of the Church's message of threat seriously. However, this inner immigration does not change anything about the inhumanness of the system and its goal of the total emotional and mental subjugation of church members. And it literally presumes the following. She must therefore, with painstaking care, remove and eradicate anything that is contrary to faith. Neuner and Roos, margin note 352. How seriously this is meant can be seen by the trail of blood left by the Crusades, the Inquisition, and the witch burnings. That the Church presently cannot put its spirit of violence into practice in physical acts of violence does not change a thing about the fact that its system of mental subjugation is contrary to human rights. The constantly repeated threat issued in different variations. If you do not believe what I tell you, you will suffer the eternal torments of hell. A curse towards people whom the Church expects to take this threat seriously, and many do so and therefore become ill, either now and then or even chronically. With their first sexual contact, young people suffer under the anxiety of having sinned. Married couples allow themselves to be forbidden the use of birth control measures. Non-Catholics who marry Catholics must, at the time of marriage, pledge to raise the children as Catholics. Mentally ill people have evil spirits driven out by church exorcists, and in the process, parents even risk the death of their child. Children abused by priests and their parents feel obliged to remain silent about the crimes. African Catholics become infected with HIV, because according to the Catholic sexual morals, the use of condoms is not allowed. Ultimately, the damages caused by church coercion do not need to be determined because, with the crimes committed against humanity via the threats that are under consideration here, a serious threat to the victim's health is already sufficient. Rurlicki, Volker Strafrecht, 2nd edition, 2007, margin note 343. In any case, it concerns the mental use of force, which is similar to other crimes against humanity, such as coercion into prostitution, Article 7, 1 ICC statute, or deportation, D, or remove and eradicate anything, apartheid. Compared to the threats of the eternal torments of hell, the temporal suffering connected with these is nigh unharmless. The church system of coercion thus falls under the elements of an offense of other inhumane acts of similar kind in the meaning of Article 7, 1K ICC statute. The fact that the church system of coercion has been in existence for about 1,500 years and is an established religion in the countries of the Western Hemisphere does not change this either. The establishment did not take place through the free recognition of the church system, but through compulsory membership, mental oppression, and bloody violence. The outcome of this historic process, which led to the worldwide church, was accepted with the help of tradition and inurement. Nolens volens, like it or not, even though throughout the century resistance of a philosophical and religious kind took place. Over and over again, these were successfully quelled, in part, in an extremely bloody way and with state help. This state help also consisted of the fact that no legal limits were set regarding the preservation of this church system of coercion. This has changed since the Roman statute of the International Criminal Court of July 1, 2002 came into effect. With this, the statutory offense of crimes against humanity was created as an international law. It protects not only against murder and manslaughter, but also has in mind human rights that go beyond this, such as protection against racial discrimination, expulsion and deportation, and other inhuman acts of a similar kind. In this respect, it is a cultural turn for mankind initiated through the international criminal law. health-endangering psychoterror consisting of coercion of faith and of conscience by way of inhumane threats is no longer tolerated, but is instead punishable insofar as it inflicted upon a civilian population through an extensive or systematic act, Article 7.1, page 1, ICC statute. The coercive system of the church is equal to such an attack, for the threats made by the church take place pursuant to or in furtherance of a state or organization policy, namely that of the church, to commit such an act, Article 7, 2A, ICC statute, in order to enforce its doctrine worldwide against the civil population. Number 4. The criminal responsibility of Dr. Ratzinger. The accused may very well not have initiated the church system of coercion, however, as Pope, he is responsible for its preservation and enforcement, and as prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith of his church, he was jointly responsible, being in a decisive position as the representative of the former Pope. He was head of the church inquisition authority and felt accordingly. In a radio interview in March 2005, he said, "Grand Inquisitor is a historic definition. Somewhere we stand in a line of continuity." And he added that one, quote, "must indeed say that the Inquisition was progress, because nothing could be condemned any more without inquisitio, a hearing." Today, the accused bears the final responsibility for all his church's doctrines and threats. Therefore, he is also responsible for the fact that the church system of coercion, installed before his election as Pope, continues to exist. He could revoke the threats of eternal torments of hell. As long as he does not do this, he fulfills the above indicated statutory offense of Article 7.1K ICC statute by way of omission. Sin of omission, interesting. Part 2, the murderous forbiddance of condoms. There is strong suspicion that, as Pope, Dr. Ratzinger has caused an undetermined number of people severe impairment of their physical health or even death in the meaning of Article 7.1A and K ICC statute. The conflict. According to UN figures, more than 22 million people in Africa are presently infected with HIV/AIDS. Approximately 30 million have already died of the epidemic. In South Africa, every fifth person is infected by it. There are about 500,000 new infections every year. Many millions of Catholics also live in the areas affected. The transmission of HIV virus occurs through the exchange of bodily fluids. For this reason, one of the most important measures for containment of the epidemic consists in urging people in the endangered areas to use condoms during sexual intercourse. According to the doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church proclaimed via the encyclical Humane Vitae by Pope Paul VI in 1968. Contraceptives, however, are strictly forbidden, and nothing changed regarding this when the number of persons infected with HIV skyrocketed during the 80s and 1990s, and the HIV virus led to millions of deaths, which continues until today. When Pope John Paul II visited Uganda in February 1993, he omitted the burning question concerning a change in life-endangering forbiddance of condoms. He preferred to accept the spread of the epidemic rather than to change the moral doctrine of the Vatican. In Nevada, Meekum of Confessors, which the same Pope commissioned in 1997, Cardinal Alfonso Lopez Trujillo, president of the Pontifical Council for the Family, emphasized the absolute validity of the old determination. The Church has always taught the intrinsic evil of contraception, that is, of every marital act intentionally rendered unfruitful. This teaching is to be held as definitive and irreformable. Members of the Catholic Church who live in the areas of South Africa threatened by HIV/AIDS, that is, primarily south of the Sahara, are faced with a terrible alternative. If they protect themselves with condoms during sexual intercourse, they become grave sinners. If they do not protect themselves out of fear of punishment of sin threatened by the church, they become candidates for death. In 1989, a Catholic moral theologian, Carlo Caffara, who today is the Archbishop of Bologna, called for ending all sexual activities, even within marriage, if one of the partners is HIV positive. Forbidding the use of condoms not only led to fatal infections among Catholics, but at the same time also abetted in the contraction of this disease among non-Catholics. For years, resistance to this unworldly and life-endangering moral has been expressed also from the ranks of the Church. According to Spiegel Online, on April 4, 2010, Kevin Dowling, the Catholic bishop in Rustenburg, South Africa, already charged his church on World AIDS Day in 2003 with being blind toward the reality of a life of millions of poor people. The people in Africa live, suffer, and die because of this disease. In his bishopric, the bishop has experienced firsthand how people in the work camps die of AIDS by the dozens. I believe that people living with HIV must be invited and challenged to use a condom in order to prevent the transmission of potential death to another person or to protect themselves from infection, especially in abusive and destructive relationships, declared the bishop. Number two, obedience with fatal consequences. But the present ruling pope also closes his ears to the moral dilemma of his priests and believers. Even worse, during his first trip to Africa in March 2009, when many African Catholics hoped for a redeeming word, he intensified the dilemma during a conversation with journalists aboard the plane that took him to Africa. He stated, "The scourge cannot be resolved by distributing condoms. Quite the contrary. We risk worsening the problem." He said that the solution lies in the spiritual and human renewal and in true friendship above all for those who are suffering. All aid organizations with no ties to churches, such as the United Nations, the International Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF, reenacted with incomprehension to so much ignorance. For the Pope's statement occurred 2 years after the publication of the sensational book, God Aids Africa, by Grill und Hippler, in which the years-long leader of the German congregation of Cape Town, Hippler, reported about the terrible moral dilemma and the mortal dangers associated with it for the Catholic population of South Africa. Among other things, he wrote, "How can we justify the death of people even if they do not live up to the Church's strict moral code? Shouldn't the teenager who sleeps with his girlfriend protect himself and her? It's literally a question of life and death." In that light, long discussions about whether the authorization of condoms might lead to an increase in promiscuity are irrelevant. Indeed, the debate has already been settled. Studies conclusively show that the use of prophylactics has no influence on the numbers of sexual partners or frequency of sexual acts. Isn't it high time that empirical studies, facts, should be integrated in the study of moral theology? But then, there is also concern that obedience to the Church's teaching authority might take a knock if moral theology is altered. How right the author was about this became evident after the publication of his book. His contract in Cape Town was not renewed by his church. Book signing tours in Germany or participation on talk shows was forbidden him by the German Bishops' Conference. In 2009, another report about the fatal conflict between church doctrine and fighting AIDS effectively was published in the book, Das Möge Gott Verhüten, May God Prevent This, by the former nun, Maiella Lenzen. Among other things, the nun reported, "For 33 years I've helped people, particularly sick people, so that they could lead a life in dignity. The people have suffered from cholera, malaria, HIV, AIDS. Their misfortune has made me courageous. Until it came to the final scandal, I was stigmatized as the condom nun because I, against the orders of the church, espoused contraceptives as a possibility for preemptively counteracting the immune deficiency AIDS. For me, this was a necessity because I have experienced the misery in the huts of the orphaned children in East Africa. I have seen the terribly emaciated bodies of the women marked by the disease. I have held their feeble hands and seen their anxious, sunken eyes." In the end, she had to leave her order. In the epilogue of her book, she writes, among other things, "The fact that the church preaches so vehemently against condoms makes it jointly responsible that on Kilimanjaro, every third person is now HIV positive. The number of dead continuously climbs. Number three, a crime against humanity." This report from an eyewitness did not change anything in the Vatican either. The same is true of an extensive expert report, which the Pope has and which raises the question of a revision of the Church's life-endangering doctrine on sexual relationships. Instead, in an interview with the journalist Peter Seewald, which led to the book Light of the World, the Pope casually comments on the problem of preventing AIDS with condoms. He said, "There may be justified individual cases, for instance, when a prostitute uses a condom, where this can be a first step towards moralization. But of course, the church does not view this as a real and moral solution. In this case, in this or that case, there can be, nonetheless, in the intention of reducing the risk of infection, a first step in a movement toward a different way, a more human way of living sexuality." This remark made the global public prick up its ears. In reality, however, it did not initiate a change. In a report by the German press agency on December 22, 2010, the following is stated about this. Church clarifies, "Condoms are still forbidden for Catholics. The Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith in Rome has stated the position of the Catholic Church on condoms more precisely. It states that to interpret the Pope's statement as permission to use contraceptives is wrong. Despite Pope Benedict's the 16th statement being frequently greeted as loosening the condom forbiddens, this church keeps to its rejection of contraceptives. The Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith stated in a so-called note that in reality, Benedict's words changed neither the moral doctrine nor the pastoral practice of the Catholic Church. In its extensive note, the congregation, formerly led by Ratzinger, especially countered deliberate wrong interpretations of this pontifical statements, of these pontifical statements. The idea that anyone could deduce from the words of Benedict that it is somehow legitimate in certain situations to use condoms to avoid an unwanted pregnancy is completely arbitrary and is in no way justified either by his words or in his thoughts. This kind of thinking is an accessory to death. Number four, the criminal responsibility of Dr. Ratzinger. It is true that the accused did not initiate the strict forbiddance of contraceptives. However, as Pope, he is responsible for the fact that it continues to exist, for he could revoke it. Due to the fact that he does not do this, he is, by omission, responsible for the fact that in regions threatened with AIDS, Catholics abstained from the protection by condoms out of fear of punishment for their sins. The church's coercive system and the threat of the eternal torments of hell associated with it for committing grave sins has, in this case, a fatal effect in hundreds of thousands, that is to say millions of cases. The Pope's moral reservation about revoking the forbiddance of condoms is no justification for accepting the risk of infection or the death of countless people and the misery of countless orphan children that go with this forbiddance. In any case, saving human lives is the greater good. It is mandatory according to international law and prevails over the church doctrine that is contrary to human rights. Part 3. Joseph Ratzinger's patronage of the sexual crimes of the clergy. Finally, there is the strong suspicion that Dr. Joseph Ratzinger, as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith of his church, and as Pope, has up to the present day systematically covered up the sexual abuse of children and youth and protected the perpetrators, thereby aiding and abetting further sexual violence toward young people in the meaning of Article 7, 1G ICC Statute, the worldwide sexual crimes of Catholic priests. Meanwhile, it is known that during the last decades, thousands of Catholic priests have sexually abused and raped tens of thousands of children and youth. The following account is limited to the sexual crimes committed to the countries most affected and some examples of the cover-up by the Church. It is mainly based on the compilation by Jeffrey Robertson, QC, The Case of the Pope, 2010, enclosed, and the reports of the German and English media. In addition, reference is made to the website gottessucker.de and the encompassing compilation, Sexual Violence in the Catholic Church During the Years 1993 to 2011, found there. 1-1 USA. The complete magnitude of the crime first became known through a series of reports by the Boston Globe in 2002. The newspaper reported that since the mid-1990s, 130 victims of a Bostonian priest reported their terrible childhood experiences. As school children, they had been abused and raped over a period of 3 decades. The cardinal in charge, Bernard Law, was well aware of the fact, and it wasn't one specific priest, but a number of his priests who were sexually molesting young boys. But his only reaction to the accusations of their victims was to transfer the priests to different parishes where their pasts were unknown. The cardinal himself was transferred to the Vatican, where he received honorable tasks, while his diocese had to pay over $100 million in damages to the victims of the priest he was covering up for. C.F. Robertson, Opsite, page 16. In all of the United States, countless victims of ecclesiastic child molesters has now spoken up. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles settled with the victims there to the tune of $660 million in damages. It also became known that the Bishop of Portland, William Leveda, had learned of the danger of pedophile priests in his diocese as early as 1985, but undertook nothing against it. The tolerance of these wrongs and their resulting damage almost plunged his diocese into bankruptcy, from which it could emerge only by agreeing to pay $75 million in damages to victims. Today, Leveda succeeds the Pope as Prefect Cardinal of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith. Other dioceses resorted to bankruptcy in order to escape child abuse laws filed by victims of sexual crimes by the clergy. The Vatican, from which came all instructions on how to deal with the problems of pedophiles in the worldwide church, did not step in to save them from bankruptcy, although it receives millions in annual contributions. Peter's pence from the dioceses. In the end, the total bill for the crimes of the church's child sex abusers could amount to $5 billion, as Forbes magazine predicts. C.F. Robertson, Opsite, pages 16 to 17. Sex abuse crimes committed by Catholic priests have become known in almost every state of the United States. When it was no longer possible to transfer the perpetrators from parish to parish or from one diocese to the other, the bishops in New York started sending them to other countries instead of prison. Recent investigations have indicted a traffic in pedophile priests to and from the U.S., with Ireland, Rome, Mexico, and Africa. The minimal number of sexual abuse cases was given in a report conducted by John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York and commissioned by the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference in 2002. 10,667 persons concerned had made plausible allegations against 4,392 priests. While in 2002, Cardinal Ratzinger wanted to reduce the number of perpetrators to 1% of the priesthood, it now became clear the number amounts to 4.3%. The worst case was that of Father Lawrence Murphy, who over a period of 20 years sexually abused 200 deaf mute boys in Wisconsin, a case which will be dealt with again in connection with Cardinal Ratzinger's actions. C.F. Robertson, op. site 18-23. It covers Ireland, it covers Germany, it covers Canada, it covers Australia and Africa. Meanwhile, it is becoming known more and more that sexual perversion is by no means limited to the simple priesthood, but reaches into the highest ranks of the Catholic Church. At the same time, the sex scandals involving bishops and archbishops frequently open the door to deeper insight into the immorality of the Catholic clergy. For example, in April 2010, the Bishop of Belgium resigned from his office because the fact that he had sexually abused his nephew for years came to light. He waited to confess his crime until the 10-year limitation period had elapsed and he could therefore no longer be punished. His case led to the appointment of an investigative board of inquiry at the Belgium Bishops' Conference, whose investigations revealed that over the course of the past decades, at least 488 cases of abuse had occurred. A state investigation of the cases did not take place, as was cited in the New York Times on July 12th of 2010. I'm just scrolling down, everybody. I want to get down to the bottom and wrap this piece up. In summation, when the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court came into effect on July 1st, 2002, this initiated a turn in the culture of mankind. The times in which politically and ideologically motivated crimes on a massive scale remained unpunished because they were not subsumable under the conventional statutory offenses of murder, unlawful detention, and assault have come to an end. The crime against humanity as defined in the Rome Statute not only pertains to the widespread masses of acts and criminal responsibility of the ringleaders, but also expanded the spectrum of objects of legal protection. In Article 7, 1K, liable for punishment are inhumane acts intentionally causing great suffering or serious injury to mental health. Provided that these injuries are similarly grave as, for instance, rape, enslavement, or abduction, with this emotional violence, which can lead to damaging a person's health, is also included. Much of the customary violence of this world that was accepted because that's how it always was, now also becomes relevant within the framework of the Rome Statute. The charges at hand come to the conclusion that this applies to the coercive system of the Roman Catholic Church, which is led by the accused, and to the terrifying threats of the eternal torments of hell associated with it. These threats led countless people into an irrational psychological and mental dependency, robbing them of the ability to make their own decisions of conscience in all areas of their life. It is only because of this coercive system that the two other charged crimes against humanity were made at all possible. A penal evaluation of this church regime that exerts utmost psychological pressure is all the more called for, since the accused attempts to divert attention from the totalitarianism of his system by praising freedom of religion all over the place, which his own church tramps underfoot, as well as by the treatment of his own members, and through the aggressive intolerance toward religious competitors, above all when they are religious minorities. In addition, the charges come to the conclusion that the accused is criminally and jointly responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people who died of AIDS, because, despite the rampant epidemic, he adheres to the church forbiddance of protective measures against the transmission of the HIV virus, enforcing it with threats of his coercive system. Finally, the charge comes to the conclusion that the accused is criminally responsible for the rising escalation of sexual crimes committed by Catholic priests in recent decades. In public, the accused plays the role of the God-fearing leader of the church, who apologizes to the victims of clerical child abusers and wants to prevent further acts. In reality, he acts like the ice-cold patron of a worldwide cover-up system, which favors the criminals at the expense of their victims and daily aids and abets new crimes. Based on the internal means of coercion of the church, it must be assumed that this system will continue indefinitely and the worldwide crimes made possible by it will continue for an unforeseeable time, that the courts in all countries will be deceived again and again, and that the crimes will remain unpunished and the new suffering will be inflicted upon thousands and thousands of children over and over again. If an international court does not call a halt to these crimes by holding accountable those responsible for them, Joseph Ratzinger is the principal offender, surrounded by a number of accomplices whose names have already been partially mentioned. The time is ripe for the prosecution at the International Criminal Court to initiate investigations, and that what was formerly known only fragmentarily by comprehensively clarified, and the church sponsors of worldwide child abuse be brought before the court. Dr. Christian Saylor, attorney at law. Dr. Gert Joachim Hetzel, attorney at law. And now I ask that you make this complaint filed at the ICC known to everybody you have on your email list, and ask the press to cover this story. This is the beginning of the closing down of the Roman Catholic Church that has held us in servitude with the canon code for at least thousands of years. I wanted to cover more of the Earth current events, and I spent an hour on that. That is maybe the most important news story that we will see in our time period, because it is the beginning of the charges of all the other ones that need to come in front of ICC. George Bush, Dick Cheney, George Tenet, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, and that's only the partial list. So I wanted to read it into the record so that I knew that we were all aware of it. So that's why I spent so much time on it. Thank you for listening. Tonight I'd also like to discuss our galactic heritage, because before we can make a change in our planetary government, we'll need to come to terms with who we are, where we are from, and why we are here. When you know the answer to the question who you are, all the other problems are solved. And these outbreaks of violence, these cries in the streets for freedom from the people in these different countries, one of the problems is that they are indigenous people with strong cultural practices, except they don't know that they're sovereign and that they're free.
The Sunnis and the Shiites in the Arab world are the indigenous of that area. And some have strong nations like Iran, Morocco, Egypt, and Tunisia. And others have strong tribes and a long road before they become a nation. Bahrain, Yemen, and Libya are good examples of this. Tribes with flags. What they don't want you to know is we are all indigenous and we are all sovereign. That is the sole purpose of filing the UCC. And the UCC goes right back to the Canon Code. That's why I wanted to bring it up. All over the world, all governments are ruled by what is called civil law. Civil law, which in all countries is called the law of the land. This goes back to when the Holy Roman Empire became the Holy Roman Vatican. The planetary imperialists have been ruling all of us through church and state. There is a second law which rules all of us on earth, and that is called the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code. That is the law of all in business. If you have a business in any country in the world, you are operating on this planet under something called UCC. Under Caesar of Rome, they established that all nations in the empire do business under worldwide uniform law. The most severe law on the planet is called Uniform Commercial Code. UCC is based directly on Vatican Code of Canon Law. That's what we're tearing down with this charge going to the ICC. That's why we want to tear down the Vatican Code, the Vatican laws. They need to be dissolved now. They're holding us in servitude from infancy till death. Consequently, when a ship pulls into port, the ship is put in its berth. Maritime UCC rules the seas. Every captain of a ship must present a certificate of manifest to the port authorities. They check the values of the goods on the ship. When you are born, you come out of your mother's water. Therefore, you must have a birth certificate, a manifest certificate, because you are a corporation-owned item. You are a human resource, commonly known as a slave. This is true for everyone on earth now, everybody. You see the fist pumping on the streets in all of those countries across the Middle East, across the Arab world. They're starting to wake up. Their consciousness has raised to the point where they're recognizing that they're slaves and they want their freedom. And the truth is, we're all slaves. Until you file your UCC, that is one of the most important things you could do for yourself, to declare your sovereignty. It's a two-page form. It's available online. It's in every state. Just put SOS into Google, SOS UCC, and you'll find it for you. Look for yours in your state. It's a two-page form. Fill it out and send it in. You're done. You are a human resource, commonly known as a slave. Until you understand the laws, symbols, and emblems, you are not free. Your birth certificate is a security on the stock exchange at 55 Water Street, New York City, USA. Order your birth certificate. On the bottom it says, "This was printed on security paper. Do not accept unless on full-color security paper." There is a series of red numbers printed on your birth certificate. Those numbers are the securities stock exchange number on the World Stock Exchange. You may take your birth certificate number and find you. Your birth certificate is a stock in America. You are worth money to the international bank that bought you in 1932. That's a very interesting year, don't you think? Our Constitution's been suspended since 1933, and the International Bank bought you in 1932. As long as you are not sovereign, you are a bought and paid for slave. Barack and Michelle Obama declared their nationality Wichita in 1997. They removed themselves from the bar, the British Accredited Registry, and they are no longer attorneys. We will have a planetary government of peace, and it will be led by the true royalty in England, Egypt, and Jordan, the Moabite people, with all the indigenous and aboriginal peoples as well. As we understand the laws, we realize we must declare our nationality. The indigenous sovereigns all over the world can live on their own land and be part of a new nation called the Aboriginal Moabite Nation, recognized by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, at The Hague, and the United Nations. It is through the Common Law Court of the Aboriginal Moabite Nation where complaints can be written to take the political criminals of high treason to The Hague. We have seen lawsuits taken to The Hague now, naming Pope Benedict, and there's one now naming Hillary Clinton. And I want to share that with you very briefly. Let me toggle over to that other article. It's absolutely fascinating. It is from the airlines. It is from a whistleblower. And let me bring it up here. One second. Okay. Here it is. This is from this is an affidavit from Daniel William Hanley in support of the International Criminal Court prosecutor investigation of the global criminal activity associated with the events of September 11th, 2001. And this complaint goes into great detail about what happened on 9/11 and how Hillary Clinton was involved. And this complaint has been written up, but I don't have any proof that it's been filed at the ICC. And this is from an airline whistleblower. So this is more on 9/11. So first we needed to see the Pope indicted at The Hague, which he has been. It was filed last week. And next come the big arrests. And this airline whistleblower has named Hillary Clinton. What is erupting in Libya, Yemen, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio is that everyone's have had a consciousness raising. This is from the Unity Cosmic Waves pulsing to the earth now, and there's no going back. How can we support them? We send our love and light, and we work as a group to continue to raise our consciousness and acknowledge our galactic heritage. And there was, I've been talking on cosmicascension.com and galacticroundtable.com a lot about finding out who you are. You know, when we do the Metatron channels, people have been asking Metatron, who is my family? Where is my home? And so I have been writing about that and going more deeply into that lately. And some of us are like the Syrian commander Barack Obama from Sirius, where all of us are star seeds who came from someplace that's not Earth. And some have Syrian heritage. They've had lifetime or more on Sirius A or Sirius B and have strong memories of this. There's several other stars that star seeds come from. Nobody on Earth is from Earth. Patricia Corey has written about an Earth portal, which Ashtar has taken me to, called the Nephthys Portal. And this is part of Atlantis in the Atlantic Ocean. And the Syrians refer to this, which is rising now. And so many people have been asking about Japan. How did it come to play that we had an earthquake in Japan? And that's a big subject I want to talk about tonight, and I have several things to share with you about that. But I want to make you aware of the Nephthys portal. I've been there, and it is amazing. And it's a part of Atlantis, and right now it's in the Atlantic Ocean, under the ocean. And it's rising now. And this is why Mother Earth keeps experiencing earthquakes. Now, the Wingmaker ships are out there and the other galactic ships have helped mitigate the death and destruction as much as possible. But it cannot be stopped. You know, there have been quotes from these famous dudes who put out these blogs, right, who say that, you know, there were nuclear warheads were buried in the seabed and that they set them off and that made the earthquake happen. That's absolute nonsense. It's not true at all. And even if, you know, 80% of what they say is true, that part is not true. There are no nuclear warheads that were buried, blah, blah, blah. None of that's true. That's just silly talk. And then, you know, another one of these famous bloggers wrote and said, it couldn't have been a natural earthquake because then there would have been tsunamis in Hawaii. But what they're not accounting for is the Wingmaker ships and the galactic ships that were out there mitigating the effects. And they did lower the tsunami effects in the other areas. And it was a natural earthquake. And it's really important that we raise our consciousness and open our hearts to that possibility. It wasn't the boogeyman who did this. Mother Earth is very powerful in herself. And it's not unusual for an earthquake to occur. Another point of view of this earthquake is that, you know, each and every one of us, every soul living on Earth, every soul living on other star systems in our galaxy, all of us together are part of totality. We are part of divine grace. We are all part of all that is. And if so many light workers and star seeds are asking the galactics to intervene in our hearts, in our minds, every day we're asking, when will they land? When will they decloak? When are they coming? They miss their family. They want the twin soul reunions. These impulses go out constantly. So if these impulses go out to divine grace and the feedback comes back that the consciousness level isn't high enough yet, what can we do to raise consciousness? The Japan earthquake certainly did raise consciousness. So in that way, Mother Earth initiated it, and we all brought it with our thoughts, with our hopes, and with our dreams. So if you look at everything as being connected in the one, in unity consciousness, then you can explain it those ways. But it had nothing to do with nuclear warheads. That's baloney. So, you know, Mother Earth must shift in order to ascend. She is a complex being. Inner Earth portals, wormholes in the ocean, hidden inner Earth tunnels, stargates, and the poles make up this complex star. All of these things exist in physicality on an electromagnetic grid, which is ascending. To do so, she must shift. And she does this with earthquakes. And Atlantis and Lemuria are rising now. And they will be fully accessible after our changeover at zero point. Zero point is when Lord Ashtar, who is solely responsible for this, from his bridge on the New Jerusalem, fires up the zero-point modulators. And this is a network between the ziggurats, the portals, and the pyramids all over Earth. And this will make a horizontal force field that will make it impossible to fire arms. And that's when we will have a world of peace. And that will not happen until the intergalactic war criminals are taken to the ICC. And today, we noted this has happened to the Pope. And now, we're waiting for the rest of the list to come in with actual indictments presented to the ICC. Now I'd like to share with you a little bit about what Patricia Corey has to say about the Nephthys portal. If you study these things and know that they are happening, then you more deeply understand how Mother Earth changes and how complex she is. So just let me read this to you. Where's your So let me start now. Given these, this is from Patricia Corey, and it's called the Nephthys Portal. I've been to this place, and I've seen these things, everybody. Given these titillating thoughts as to the buried secrets in the Book of Gates, I found it more than prophetic to learn that the myth of the murder of Osiris places his head, the 13th piece of his body, in the Osirian at Abydos. I became convinced of this idea. The mysterious Osirian at Abydos, a megalithic enigma the Comitians date as 50,000 years old, actually could be the location that contains the holographic coordinates of the Master Skull, the head of Osiris. It is just possible that the Master is about to take form there, beneath the perennial waters that seep into the Osirian with their murky pools, camouflaging an ancient secret. At the moment, the 12 essential parts of the Galactic Computer Network, the Crystal Skull Committee, are reassembled by keepers of the crystal skulls around the world, embracing the idea that Osiris is actually a metaphor for the actual passage between worlds and dimensions, and that Nephthys is the hidden doorway itself. She does, after all, guard the gate. It seems all too clear to me that Abydos, the Osirian, where the head of Osiris supposedly lies, holds at least one of the keys to the mystery of the crystal skulls. Isn't it time we turn these mythical keys, unlocking the secret passageways, entering through the wormholes of the dimensions themselves into the no-time? This important myth is an archetypical representation of our rebundling DNA at a time when we are reactivating the dormant DNA fragments within us to eventually return to the full 12-stranded light body beings. It speaks to us how Osiris, the passageway through the dimensional realities, is achieved when we retrieve the scattered bits and pieces of our deactivated DNA. The mud, a metaphor of our final years of darkness here on Earth, by giving form to the template, the phallus, the electric male principle in order to seed Isis, the womb, the female magnetic forces of Gaia, so that we can birth the Horus, the new dawn of enlightened humanity? If that is the case, does not the Pharaoh dwell within each of us? With the story guiding us to that all chemical moment, we need to locate the proverbial hidden skull of Osiris, the coordinates of that multidimensional hologram, before the transformational process can truly begin. Referring again to the book Atlantis Rising, the Syrians indicate that the Crystal Skull Committee resided in the Temple of Nephthys, which they tell us was located deep within an amethyst grotto in the inner earth sanctuary of Yetsnuni worship. What I glean from their description of this inner earth reference point is that it appears to correspond to the surface area known as the Devil's Triangle, where for decades we have heard of ships and planes going crazy or even disappearing off the radar. In the chapter, The Skull Committee from Atlantis Rising, they state, although the Temple of Nephthys has drawn deep into the below of your world, beneath the sands of the Atlantic Ocean, its crystalline form remains intact to this day. Very true. It remains one of the most powerful vortex points of your planet, where for countless decades ships and planes have vanished into the vapors. These mysterious events simply cannot be denied, and for many official reports of the disappearance of military equipment, seafaring craft, and entire crews have described with great detail their vanishing from radar controls from 1 second to another, a scientific impossibility. Atlantis Rising. I knew if the Syrian speakers were giving us such a specific clue, then there would have to be a link, something tangible that I could work with, and I set out to find it. Where to look? Gaia's energy grid lines, that's Mother Earth, everybody. a plotting of the primary fields of this great planet would surely provide guidelines to the modern-day seeker, as they clearly have to the ancients. If the Temple of Nephthys lay below the ocean floor in the Bahamas, how could it be linked to Egypt? A number of fascinating charts and grid maps have been created over the years, which utilize the sacred geometry of the Platonic solids of the geophysical reference points, as well as Earth's harmonic resonant peaks, to delineate the planet's energy lines and power points. Exploring these resources, I came up with a planetary grid map designed by William Becker and Beth Higgins in 1987, which based itself on earlier plots from Russian scientists. They anchored the map by centering it at the Great Pyramid and then aligning it to north and south axial poles of the planet to provide an incredible graph of Earth's bioelectromagnetic systems. Sure enough, they found uncanny similarities in the locations of the Bermuda Triangle, which sits on the same northern latitudinal grid line as a primary point in the Atlantic Ridge, an uppermost northern point of the ancient Dogon peoples in Western Africa. The Great Pyramid at Giza and even Lhasa in Tibet. If you study the horizontal energy grid line that passes through Cairo, specifically through the Great Pyramid, you will be able to pinpoint the locations I've indicated above. Notice, too, that these points are triangulated with secondary power points on the planet, which many of which are known as vile vortices of Earth energy, and which are often the location of ancient sites of worship. You will notice, for example, that Eastern Islands forms a cardinal point in a triangular energy pattern that links directly with the Devil's Triangle in the Bermudas. I can hear the skeptics screaming, from classic archaeologists to the modern interpreters of Egyptian history and myth, but here goes. The following primary energy centers of Earth's northern latitudinal grid lines are all connected to each other, as they are to the Temple of Nephthys, via inner Earth tunnels that all lead to Argatha, the inner world of the Earth, believed to be the home of a highly evolved, spiritually advanced galactic civilization. The Bermuda Triangle, where the famed underwater Bimini Road, suggested as an ancient Atlantean roadway, is found. A point on the Atlantic Ridge known as Atlantis Fracture, corresponding to the key location in Atlantis. Northwest Africa, where the Dogon were located. The Great Pyramid in Egypt, and the Himalayas between Lhasa and the Xian Pyramids of China. The head of Osiris, supposedly buried at the Osirian, is actually a metaphor for the master Atlantean crystal skull, the 13th, which was returned to the sixth dimension for safekeeping, awaiting the reunion of the 12 that have been held in safe hiding at the four corners of our world, as prophesied by the Maya. Its holographic imprint is located in the waters that flow below the temple. The Osirian awaiting the electric current, in a sense, that will be activated when the 12th are reunited by the keepers of the crystal skulls, who will be shown how to locate the coordinates and send the frequencies of enlightened mind into the crystalline matrix of Gaia and the greater universe. We cannot discount how much power and authority Mother Earth has, and how much these sacred sites, inner portals, tunnels, stargates of Earth, in the mountains, and in the tectonic plates in the seas, in Atlantis rising and Lemuria rising, have caused this Japan earthquake. Man, nuclear rigmarole, none of that had anything to do with the earthquake. This is Mother Earth. And until you raise your consciousness to accept that fact, nothing you do is going to help anything, because you're going to just sit there in fear, cowering under your sheet that maybe the boogeyman is going to come and blow you up with some nukes. And so I want to share with you, besides this reading, two prominent channels have also come out this week with new channels. I've channeled three times about the Japan earthquake, twice from Lord Metatron and once from Lord Ashtar. Two prominent channels came out with other things that are showing this in a different light, and I'd like to share those with you now so we can accept the Japan earthquake as a natural occurrence of earth ascension. It's so important, everybody. This is from Celia Finn. She channels Archangel Michael. She is a fantastic channel. I've been reading her for years. She says, these are indeed strange times that we live in, and as I was thinking about the events in Libya today, I realized the world that we emerge into will be completely different to the one that we have just left. At this point, I received a transmission or a channel from the cetacean consciousness, the whales, who are the keepers of the planetary Akasha. This is a channel, so if it resonates, fine, and if not, then, you know, pass it on. According to transmission, as the Earth moves into the fifth dimension from the third, the planetary Akasha or records are also being rewritten. You know, everybody, the Akasha is in that portal in Bimini. The Nephthys portal holds the Akasha, and it's rising now. It's shifting. It's shifting on its axis. It's shifting its tectonic plates, and sometimes earthquakes happen. This is a process of writing backwards from the future. Time is, after all, an illusion in the quantum reality. So what is happening is that the future reality is already in place, and we are writing backwards to ensure that the present aligns fully with the future that is in alignment with the divine will. Now, this has to do with the arrest of the war criminals and sending them on, if necessary, to the solar tribunal at Saturn, and after that, if necessary, to second death, where they will be, where they will experience being written off of the timelines. They will no longer appear in the Akasha, and that affects the Akasha of every living soul who ever came to pass. And that's what these whales are talking about. This is a process of writing backwards from the future. Time is, after all, an illusion in the quantum reality. So what is happening is that the future reality is already in place, and we are writing backwards to ensure that the present aligns fully with the future that is in alignment with divine will. In the old 3D timeline, the planet was heading for catastrophe, and there were many prophecies that saw this. So many of the indigo children who came to engineer the shift were souls from the future, whose specific work was to ensure that the 5D present would align with the future that was necessary for the Earth to survive and to create a golden cosmic civilization. These ones are right now busy on the soul group level with this process of aligning the present with the future. This means that certain major events that would have happened have been avoided or have been toned down so that the destruction is not complete. These souls who have this mission are working to ensure the Earth passes into the fifth dimension as easily as possible and with the minimum of loss of life and disaster. But this is like editing a movie. The new timeline has to be linked to the old one, but certain things change. So it is that many people are in fear of the end because that was the old timeline. But the new timeline is bypassing the end and aligned with the future, the new Earth future. This affects us on the individual level as well as the global level. In your own life, you may have noticed that certain relationships or careers that seem so promising just seem to come to an end. This is because they are not aligned with where you are going, the future that already exists. Once the transition is complete, your movie is being edited so that you get to the place where you need to be, on time and in good order. You know, everybody, a lot of people will be leaving. They're going to other places. They're going to Herculobus. They're going to other planet. They're going to a parallel Earth. Wherever is the greatest good for their soul development is where they will be going, and not all of them will be coming to the new Earth. And the same applies to the planet as a whole. The highest good is being served. So I am told things will continue to be very weird for most of this year until 11-11-11, when the Earth should be fully aligned for the entry into the trajectory for the new timeline and the future that is now. And as this happens, the old Akashic records are canceled in favor of the new. And it is almost as though certain things never happened. And so, one of the best ways to cope with the current energies is just to accept whatever happens is taking us and the planet to where we need to be in that future new Earth that is forming right now. It is all in divine order. The future engineers have it under control on the higher level. We just have to fasten our seatbelts and go for the ride. Nothing will ever be the same again, and for that we can be deeply grateful. Some people were asking me on the forum, and I was saying that I'm working with the Wingmaker ships, and I do this in my night work, and this is what they're working on. They work with the Earth grids. They work with the electromagnetic forces, and they work with the timelines, literally, physically changing them. And this is the work that I work with, the Galactics doing. There's a great new message from Laura Gargo, and she can be found at thinkwithyourheart.net. She says, "There is a deep soul-level silence that is palpably permeating the planet right now. The human heart is opening and adjusting to the amplified frequencies of love, and many are left reeling from all that has transpired since March began. It's not as if we didn't know the magnitude of change that was before us, but the impact of it all, the integrating and aligning, is now pulsing through every level of our being, felt in every bone in our bodies. So much has taken place within and around us that we are just now beginning to figure out where these shifts landed us. It almost feels like we endured a shipwreck in the middle of the night." "We're cast out to the sea on a little raft and left to the fate of the tides. By sunrise, we notice that we're bumping into rocks of a new, unknown, unexplored shore. This is where we are right now in regard to our new level of consciousness, new template of love. The devastating and recalibrating events that took place in Japan and shook the globe last week, in a very literal sense, were the result of the same energies that precipitated a major heart and plexus opening throughout all of humanity. The energies behind this event caused a massive expansion in the high heart, as well as the solar plexus. And this expansion process is creating the new template of love that is now anchoring on the planet. This new love is a combination of empowered love, high heart, and spiritual wisdom, solar plexus. What the unseens refer as the activation of our body brain. On a physical level, this opening can be felt in the center of the chest, through the back of the heart, and in the pit of the stomach. Symptoms can be based on our personal collection of energetic genetic miasms, but generally our solar plexus third chakra is linked to our stomach, abdomen, upper GI tract, liver, gallbladder, pancreas, kidney, spleen, and adrenal glands, and the heart center, fourth chakra, is linked to our heart, lungs, blood vessels, shoulders, ribs, breasts, diaphragm, and upper esophagus. And so all of these areas are subject to cellular detoxification during this time. Some of the more prominent symptoms may be manifesting as tightening pain in the chest, shortness of breath, anxiety, extreme and unrelenting heartburn and indigestion, acid reflux, nausea, heart flutters, palpitations, arrhythmia, soreness, sensitivity, and detox organs and along the spine. Note, for the lucky ones experiencing that drop to the floor heartburn, drinking a little baking soda and water is the only thing I found to put out the fire temporarily. Also, as these energy centers open more fully, it can also cause great discomfort in the middle of the back, where many are unfolding their etheric wings, opening the energy centers behind the heart. I am hearing that those affiliated with the first wave of the ascension timeline are affected or afflicted by these energies the most right now. We are still in the throes of integrating this new wave of love, which not only alters or recodes the layers of the auric body, but in biological terms stimulates the thymus gland located behind the breastbone between the heart and the throat to literally expand, which also forces the chest to expand to house the enlarged gland, which is now receiving even greater influxes of light. In other words, love hurts. Empowered love. The growing high heart energy center governs compassion and inner peace, as well as our connection to the world's soul. This recent heart opening is why we, humanity, are no longer exempt from the human condition as a whole. And just as we are more increasingly and viscerally affected by what takes place on the global stage, we are also affecting the whole of humanity more directly and profoundly now. We have always known that we were all connected, but as the heart reemerges as the primary thinking center, we are coming to know this in more affable ways. The overall result is this expansion, opening, activation is yielding our advanced divine human capabilities to love beyond mental and emotional attachment. This higher level of love transcends emotion and is what is required to effortlessly and successfully navigate through the remaining years of global ascension. Those capable of tapping into, harnessing, grounding, and fully embodying this divine love are those who have stabilized enough to lead the next group of ground troops into the new era. It's important to realize that this love is not the same as compassion. Though it includes compassion, it is at a much higher level, more like empathy versus sympathy, where we can understand the feelings of others without getting entangled, overwhelmed, and lost in those feelings. And it is even broader and more comprehensive than that. It is the kind of love that holds all of humanity in a safe space by deeply knowing and exuding from within that everything is in divine perfect order, regardless of the external circumstances that will continue to challenge and befuddle us. This love is the same type of unconditional love that we have received from our soul teams and spirit guides through our own ascension process over the last 12 years, while we endured the dismantling, restructuring, and rebuilding of our personal lives. Even though our guides are so deeply care for our well-being, they never dwell on or identify with our suffering or darkness, knowing it would only serve to enhance our pain. Instead, they softly and continually lift our sights to a more expanded view, to the greater acts of love that often precipitate our suffering. Those same acts that force us to embrace and cultivate more of our potential. This is the love that the lightworkers, starseeds, indigos, etc. are being asked to embrace and embody now without wavering. We are being prompted to apply the divine feminine principles of love in a divinely masculine way to hold the pillars of light in place by remaining strong and disciplined in our focus, divine father archetype energy. And while nurturing humanity with the feeling that all is well, divine mother archetype energy. At this stage of our journey, it is our constant responsibility to remain neutral, knowing that our wavering thoughts can create profound waves of electrical distortion, which can greatly magnify the thoughts of powerlessness and discordance in the collective mind. The kind of higher vibrational love that we are called to put forth is empowered and responsible, and therefore does not identify with or feed the collective mind with disempowering thoughts of the same vibration. Thoughts such as sympathy and pity. Contrary to that, divine love emanates neutrality, the golden elixir of creation, which cradles those in need and fills the collective mind with thoughts of empowered love, peace, possibility, and potential. To a polarized mind, that type of love, love with detachment, may seem callous and unfeeling, but is really the opposite of that. It is such a high vibration of love that it encompasses the entire gamut of human emotion from one polar extreme to the other. To get here, one must personally traverse and transmute the collective shadow of humanity by experiencing and integrating through feeling all aspects of human darkness, where we eventually can accept suffering as the pathway to wholeness through contrast and without becoming immobilized or traumatized from it. For those who are beginning to experience this new human characteristic of empowered love, you may be noticing the external events are no longer shaking you to the core. And if they are, your rebound rate is quickening, that you have a stronger ability to stay centered while witnessing perceived human tragedy and can finally distance yourself from the pain of others. This ability is a direct result of our reconnection to our internal power source. We are increasingly less dependent upon external sources to sustain us, which means we are less affected by them as well. Our internal state of being now takes precedence over everything, so things that used to once thwart us no longer have the power over us. This is the ultimate state of being in the world, but not of it. Since lightworkers, starseeds, indigos, etc., are tremendous empaths, getting to this place was a rather daunting feat. But deeply, genetically, we understood that transcending the emotional body was a must, and we could only be successful as true light bearers when we achieved this state of balance from within. Well, this state is now, and we are starting to feel it. This empowered love that comes from being plugged in to our internal power source is the only kind of love that will carry us through to the new age. It is the substance that we must use to build the bridges for more of the masses to walk over. A love that serves as the fortified light and shines like a beacon through the surfacing darkness that will continually threaten to engulf humanity through this powerful time of transition. This type of love is anchoring and what we have worked so long and hard to achieve. It is the support system required to rebuild our earth. We are still learning, and in the process we are perfecting the art of temperance, remaining as the eye of the hurricane, the grounded still point of the swirling winds that brings everything into balance and helps others to feel secure. The divine love in action and the only way of the way shower. The Unity Wave. On March 20th to 21st, the day of vernal equinox, the North autumnal in the South, and followed by a super perigee moon, there was another wave of awakening souls released from the third dimensional matrix of mental captivity. I am hearing that this next wave activation period actually began with a massive X-class solar flare that precipitated the geomagnetic disruptions and resulted in the monumental earth shifting that took place last week. I don't think it's a coincidence that on March 9th we entered the period of the ninth wave, the final evolutionary wave of energy to push humanity into unity consciousness, according to Carl Johan Kalman. And on the same day, we experience a massive X-class Earth-directed solar flare. And on March 11th, an 11/11 Stargate day, Uranus, also known as the Great Awakener, enters Aries on the same day an 8.9 earthquake and tsunami ravaged Japan. From what I'm hearing, the massive shift into unity consciousness was enabled by a divinely ordered amalgamation of celestial, stellar, solar, and galactic happenings that served three purposes. shook the planet and her people to the core, which jolted the mass consciousness to a conscious level of interconnectivity, created a massive wave of heart opening for all of humanity, pushed those prepared to enter the unity timeline as forerunners of the new paradigm deeper into alignment with their original divine blueprints, so they are and will be even further removed from the 3D dimensional dross. This is all a simultaneously happening, precipitated by the same magnanimous forces of creation, and depending on where we reside on our path to full human potential. Ascension is not a singular act, but one of great diversity, each and every one of us at our own and varied level of consciousness, participation with our personal and global evolution. In other words, the energies of co-creation are available to us now. However, we are not all on the same timeline, and so each of us will experience these energies according to how far we've progressed on our personal ascension path. As those prepared to enter into full participation with the unity wave of consciousness begin to settle onto their new axis, another group of souls begin the next phase of awakening. The simultaneous shift is what will propel those new world teachers and pioneers to the fore. They will be called forth in great demand. The numbers increase in your favor now. A timed release awaits at a fortnight, pray tell, from the spiritual hierarchy. Dealing with compassion, dealing with compression. So much to do, so little time. The Pleiadians have been sharing with me that many are finding it difficult to center in the space required to be released from the time-space continuum or linear timeline, and would like to make it clear that there is no way to rationalize with these folding energies. As we make our complete transition to the unity timeline, we are still caught between worlds, and we can very easily get caught up in the swirling energies of collapsing linear time, and even be tormented if we are attached to the process. The racy thoughts and feelings associated with compression or seeming increase in time is it due to the expiration of the old construct, while we are not yet fully immersed in the new. This in-between space can be confusing, can be a confusing time because the energy required to keep up with linear time is not consistent with the rate which it is passing, which ultimately just leaves our heads spinning and our hearts racing. This is why it is becoming so difficult to schedule anything because everything seems like it's happening at once. Even the season changes feel different somehow. For example, spring is finally here in the north and the flowers are beginning to break through the earth and the sun is getting warmer, yet somehow it feels like spring was just here, like winter didn't even happen, even though I know it was long and grueling. When I think about the winter we just had, I can remember the feelings associated with it and how long it seemed, but then when I think about spring, I am so fully immersed in its presence and winter fades out completely. It really does feel like everything is happening at once, but not. So surreal. To all of this, they say, let go of your attachments to time. Cease to resist its passing, and you will find yourself more easily aligned with the eternalness at the present. Obviously, this is a lot to ask, because most of our reality constructs in 3D are created according to linear and not cyclical time. To let go of the linear time construct threatens to make us all even more reclusive, if that's possible. However, to maintain our equilibrium in this year of incredibly rapid evolution, it will be required that we do so. We can no longer look to life as something that needs to be accomplished, but as something that begs to be experienced. This is the difference between the old paradigm and the new. In the new, all that exists exists because we are co-creating it with greater forces of intelligence and divine timing. Creation does not require a linear format, so we are learning to jump around and bend with the energies that beckon us through our hearts and not through our minds. In lieu of setting deadlines, we are better supported here to set timelines. a concept where time moves from event to event and not necessarily in a straight line. The difference is in the flow, the release of mind-made parameters that open to the divine flow of perfection. The unseens also remind us that a solid way to release ourselves from the compression of linear time is to keep ourselves anchored in the present through mindful activity. Activities that keep us focused in our bodies will serve us well this year and prove to be more effective than in times past. This is because our physical bodies are housing the new frequencies more than ever, and therefore the new timeline exists within us, not around us. To access this state of eternalness, we can consciously make the switch from external to the internal through body-focused tasks or activities. To greater love, from Lauren. ThinkWithYourHeart.net. That's fantastic. Okay, everybody. Wow, that was a lot to absorb tonight. We're going to take a music break. And when we're done with that, I would like you to join me in a meditation. We're going to do a meditation that's an oldie but a goodie. I wrote it about a year ago. And it is the Saint Germain Elixir of Life Meditation. So this is another meditation where you will receive a gift from Saint Germain that will lift you up and energize you as we're going through these changes and support you in that. So take a little musical break. This is a very high form of music that when you tune into it, it'll make you spacey and ready for meditation. Enjoy it, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, let's segue into meditation now. That is Craig Pruce and Ananda. That is some beautiful medicine. The work they do with their music is fantastic. Please enjoy this meditation now, everybody.
Hi, everybody. This is Beth from the GalacticRoundtable.com. Please join me now for a meditation. This is brought to us on Easter Sunday, April 4th, from Saint Germain. This is Saint Germain speaking. Begin this Easter meditation by closing your eyes. Take some slow, deep breaths and become calm. We invite all our friends to this meditation. Sananda and Ashtar, Lady Master Nada and Lady Athena, Mother Sekhmet and Alcyone, Metatron, Michael and Maitreya, Lord and Lady of Sirius, Lord and Lady of Arcturus, Dr. Lorfeb, Soltek, Monka and Cortan, Tom the Ringtail Cat, and all our Peshat brothers and sisters, Malik and Mob, Merlin and all the Ascended Masters, Angelic Hosts, and Galactic Family. Please see yourself gather into a group Merkaba. We will head out to the stars, where we will visit the planet Mercury in the 13th dimension. As you disembark from the Merkaba, you see very, very bright, brilliant sunlight. The sun is intense here. It is the closest planet to the sun. The quality of light is gentle and does not hurt your eyes. The atmosphere here has gold dust floating everywhere. We invite you now into a great temple. Standing outside of this temple is a statue of Maat. This is the temple of wisdom, and held inside is all the wisdom of truth. Enter the temple, and you see a hall. On either side of a long hall are held portals where one may enter to revisit events and garner the wisdom of the ages. This is a kind of university of truth. Held inside this place is every great work ever written. There are places here to sit and open holographic representations of the great works and remember them again. As you come to the end of a long hall, you enter an open space where the ceiling is much higher and painted with all the constellations in the sky. This is, in fact, sentient, and the stars on the ceiling rotate all night as they are up in the night sky. hanging from the center of the ceiling is a very large, multifaceted, pendulous emerald. Please stand under the emerald, and there you will see me waiting for you. I, Saint Germain, offer a chalice and invite you to drink the elixir of life. This is indeed the gold dust. As you drink, it enters your body immediately and pulses through your bloodstream. You know that age reversal has begun. The elixir of life also dissolves all old programming and allows more truth to be understood. As the gold dust courses through your veins, it stimulates the hypothalamus, hippocampus, pituitary, and finally the pineal glands in your brain. You are now gifted with cities, with higher abilities. Now, as you practice each day, you will be able to bring in more of your gifts naturally. You exit the temple, and on the grounds outside, you meet Lord Melchizedek. We will pause here for a few seconds, so you may tell him your heart's desire. This is your opportunity to speak with him and have your questions answered. Pause now and hear what he has to say to you. You soak up the sun rays here and feel great peace on this Easter Sunday as we come into a new era of planetary peace. With great gratitude for what we have garnered from our journey, we enter into our group Merkaba. We know we may return any time to the Temple of Wisdom at Mercury. Please open your eyes when you are ready and know you have received an ascension activation of your higher gifts. Peace and love, Saint Germain.
All right, everybody. Thank you for meditating with me tonight. All right. Next, I thought I would share with you something I've written about multidimensionality. So, sit back and relax and enjoy this, everybody. Your multidimensional self. You are a multidimensional being living on a multidimensional earth in a multidimensional universe. Your highest self is called the monad, and from there, your cell splits into many bodies, descending down into the lower dimensions. You have many soul extensions living lives in other places, in parallel universes and in super universes. There are an infinite number of these. You exist in the physical realms and in the light realms, or non-physical realms. These are the fifth dimension and above, and are known as the etheric realms. When you exist above the 352nd dimension, you are a pure ball of radiant rainbow light. At the moment you are created, your twin flame is created. You are both the same, except one male and one female. Above the 352nd dimension, these aspects of you are called twin rays. As you descend the dimensions into the physical dimensions, you enter physical bodies and are known as twin flames.
These represent the Kumara violet flame in the womb space of your heart. The first dimension is a point. The second dimension is a line extending out from that point to form a plane with a horizon. The third dimension is latitude, a point in space and in time. Imagine the X and Y axis of algebra. The fourth dimension is time. No matter what you have ever heard, the fourth dimension is time and has always been time. The fifth dimension is the non-physical realm, the etheric realm. When starships are decloaked, they have descended into the third dimension of Earth and have taken on their physical form, and we see them. When they are cloaked, they remain in the etheric realm in their etheric form, and we cannot see them. But they can see us. We go on the etheric realms in our dream time and in our meditations. It is here we can explore our multidimensional self. This way, we can also explore the physical etheric. As an example, you can call your twin flame close to you, and you may not see them or hear them, but you can sense them. When they come near, you feel warmth or tingling or both. You may also sense a smell or a wave of energy or a change in temperature around you. When you do this, you are exploring the physical etheric realm. Learning to practice meditation daily is the most important thing you can do to merge with your other dimensional selves. It is crucial in developing all other gifts. It is essential to expand your light and consciousness. When we begin, we are often interrupted by the ego mind, which is responsible for the mindless chatter. It seems if you sit upright in your chair and close your eyes, all of a sudden you're thinking about what you need at the store, or how to solve that relationship issue you're upset about, or did you turn off the stove? Can't remember. Ego mind has a very important role in our lives. It helps us stay grounded in the physical. It reminds us to set the morning alarm or turn right at the next light. We must learn to disassociate with ego long enough to float out to the other dimensions in meditation. When you have mastered this skill, then you can visit home at will. You will find little else gives you as much joy. No one will have to ask you or remind you to meditate. From the meditation state, you can go on to the ships. You will eventually remember how to see through your third eye and hear with telepathy and meditation. Eventually, you can have instant-on telepathy without meditation. We can use this course to explore any blocks you have in this area. As blocks are removed and you attune to the higher energies and begin to look at things from the higher perspective, you will be more and more relieved to remember these other parts of you, the multidimensional you. When you begin to meditate, invite your little mind, ego, to just be an observer. Invite ego to perch on your shoulder and watch, but not comment. Call Archangel Michael to keep you well protected on your journey. He can carry you back no matter how far out you go. Always thank him for joining your journey. Ask that everything that happens within meditation occurs in the office of the Christ and only in the office of the Christ. This keeps uninvited renegades from attempting to communicate with you. Now, find a comfortable place where you can relax and not be disturbed. Lying in bed, soaking in the tub, or sitting in a chair or under the banyan tree. Make sure where you are is not so comfortable that you'll just go to sleep. Slow your breathing, take deep breaths, and slow your heart rate. This process allows the natural DMT in your brain to connect with the gold dust, the melanin stored in your pineal and pituitary glands. When this happens, the natural chemicals in your brain raise in level, allowing you to go out your crown chakra into your etheric body and travel in the etheric realm for your meditation. It is the same process when you dream during sleep. A movie screen goes up on the event horizon. This will happen naturally with practice, and it is not necessary to take anything to achieve it. You have ascended three times in other places before being invited to be at Earth in this crucial moment. You know how to do this. It is like riding a bike, and if you get up in the seat, it will come back to you. You have to practice, just like remembering to ride a bicycle. When you are ready to return from your adventure, Archangel Michael will bring you back safely to your room. Slowly move your fingers and toes and open your eyes when you're ready. You may also get to this state by staring into your own eyes in a mirror in a dimly lit room. You may also get to this state by staring at the flame of a candle or of the twinkling of bright sunlight on water. Experiment, be in joy, and leave ego as an observer, not a participant. I often call Archangel Michael Mother Sekhmet, Saint Germain, Lord Ashtar, Lord Arcturus, Dr. Lorfan of Sirius, Archangel Chamuel, Archangel Metatron, Lord Sananda, the Lady Masters, Ra, or others to join me on my journey. Sometimes I call to all of them and ask them to stand before me, and I ask them who would like to come with me this time. Our guides will volunteer when they have something special to share with us or someplace special to take us. Explore and see what you find out there. Get to know your multidimensional self, and it will open a new world of discovery and take you to higher consciousness where you can reconnect. By doing this, you end the suffering you experience in the ego-based world of 3D. You experience a disconnect from your thoughts and become aware of totality. You become aware of divine grace. You find the guru inside of you, that divine spark of all that is, which was descended into your physical form from the highest realms of the Creator. You become one with your mighty I Am, and you remember who you are. When you know who you are, where you came from, and why you are here, all problems disappear. Namaste. I wrote that, everybody, to go with my new Galactic Ascension course, which I'm offering now, and it goes deeply into all aspects of ascension, and it's designed to help you consider things you never thought about before, so that no matter if you're newly awakened or if you've been studying these things for 40 years, it will trigger you to go deeper with your ascension process. And there are several tidbits in the course. This one, your multidimensional self, is something I've been talking about a long time. People don't realize that when you do not integrate meditation as a daily practice, you're robbing yourself time from visiting with your multidimensional self. And who wants to do that? So I want to thank everybody who's been keeping up with continuing to send donations. It's very necessary for me to survive. It helps me pay all the bills that I have to pay to keep Galactic Roundtable going, like my electric bill and the hosting fees and the BBS radio bill. And there's just several costs that come in to me showing up every day. And the donations help so much, and I appreciate it. And I started to think to myself, how can I expand my spiritual service and give something back for that support which you've shown me? And so I'm starting to give services of doing star attunements. And this is an energy exchange from, I think I'm offering 23 different ones, where I connect with the energy of this place, this star or planet, be it your home or be it somewhere that you just want to experience those energies and integrate them into your body. I have gone through a special augmentation, and I can pull in the energies from this planet and put them into your body. And that energy that's specific to that place
raises your consciousness, raises your energetic levels, increases you vibrationally, and you will feel it when it's happening. And it's a tremendous tool. I did this work several years ago, and I was doing the star attunements. I had them done for me. And after I had 4 star attunements, I was able to remember. I was able to call in my gifts, and it raised me up so much more than anything else had. So I'm offering these now at a cost that is very minimal, much less than what other people do it for. And it's just for the purpose to help keep me going, you know, keep Galactic Roundtable online, and also give something back to you, because there's no reason to hold these things back anymore. This takes place over about a half hour, and I schedule it with you, and we experience this together. We connect our energies together, and I channel those energies from the higher realms into your body. The other thing I'm offering is the Galactic Ascension Course, and this includes channeled information from me, and it is a self-study guide. So we do back and forth communications through emails, and through what we learn, then we integrate new practices for you. There's meditations included, and there's a star attunement included in that. That way, you know, if you wanted to do, you know, when you do the Galactic Ascension Course, you get a star attunement included. So this is a way for you to have some back and forth with me, some support to guide you through and walk you through what the next levels for you can be, and give you suggestions. But it's also self-study, so you're guiding your own growth as you go through it. And so I wanted to thank everybody, and I've created these now, and I'll be sending you an email to remind you. So I wanted to share this part about your multidimensional self. I hope you enjoyed it. Fly so high above with you. On a cool
suddenly swooping low on an ocean deep, rising up.